they're not.
Hello?
I don't know.
Hello?
Commercial Stakeholder Group, CSG, Room Opal, starting at 9 o'clock, Tech Alex Surratt.
Hello. Hello, great. If we could just get everybody settled. Okay, if I could get everyone's attention. So first, can I get, is it possible to get that screen up so people can see the, do we have the opportunity to get the Adobe chat room up on the screen? Yep. Thank you, and are we recording? Yeah, great. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Welcome, everyone. My name is Chris Wilson, chair of the business constituency, and your host, if you will, for today's commercial stakeholder group open meeting. Thank you all for coming this morning. We've got a fairly full agenda in a relatively short time frame, and today obviously is a very busy day. So we'll go ahead and get started. If you could just look, for those that around the room and even in the chat room, we have the agenda out there. Obviously, we'll, in just a minute or two, we'll hear from both David Conrad and Ash Rangan to talk to us a little bit about technical issues and security issues affecting ICANN, and they're happy to take questions from folks, and then we'll go ahead and discuss our final board prep, which will be momentary. Prepping for our discussions with the board coming up soon, and then perhaps spend a little time talking about CCWG accountability and sort of the state of play with that, and then any other business folks may have. So perhaps while we're setting up the screen here, maybe we'll just quickly go around the table to save time. Just quickly around the table, everyone just quickly introduce themselves, and then we'll go ahead and get started. So, Greg.
Thank you, and good morning. I'm Greg Shatton. I'm the president of the Intellectual Property Constituency.
Angie Graves, B.C.
Marilyn Cade, B.C.
Jimson Olufoye, Vice Chair, Finance and Operation, B.C.
Mahmoud Latouf, B.C.
Heather Forrest, IPC, member of the GNSO Council, and our non-contracted parties House Vice Chair of the GNSO Council.
Claudia Selly, B.C.
Cheryl Miller, CSG Representative, B.C.
Aparna Sridhar, B.C.
Susan Kawaguchi, B.C., GNSO Counselor.
Alain Bidron, Orange, and representing also the European Telecommunication Network Operators Association, ISPCP.
Osvaldo Novoa, ISPCP.
Olivier Muron, Orange, and ISPCP.
Jonathan Zook, conscience of the IPC.
Good or bad?
Griffin Barnett, IPC.
Peter Rainfort, IPC. Mark Trachtenberg, IPC.
Steve Metallitz, Vice Conscience of the IPC.
Malcolm Hutty, ISPCP. I don't know whether I can claim to be the conscience or not.
Steve Del Bianco, with the Business Constituency and Vice Chair for Policy.
Paul Mitchell, BC.
Denise Michelle, BC.
Wolfrich Knoben. I'm not a president, but I like that, Greg. So we don't have one in the ISPCP. I'm a vice chair, and we are going to think about how to amend our charter accordingly. Thank you.
Ash Rangan, head of tech for ICANN.
Thank you. And then I'll quickly just announce folks that are participating remotely. I see Alan Shankman, Laurie Schulman, Mark McFadden, Mert Saka, Peter Rinforth, and Tony Holmes. And hopefully I've mentioned everyone that's participating at least remotely. And also, Phil.
Yeah, Phil Corwin, BC, BC counselor, and bad influence on the BC.
Thank you, Phil. And also want to thank ICANN staff for their coordination, and most certainly thank Chantel Dirksen, the CSG secretariat, who is participating from Los Angeles and deserves a hearty round of applause because her schedule is completely thrown for a loop since she's 8 hours behind us. So thank you, Chantel, for all your help. So thank you all again for being here. Why don't we go ahead and turn to both David and Ash. And I know I think, provided you a little insight into what we're interested in. Perhaps maybe you could just spend a couple of minutes just talking about the work you all are doing, and then maybe we can open up the floor. So thank you. Yeah, I think, quick, Chantel, are you running the slide deck for Ash? I think we've got it coming up.
Hi, Chris. This is Chantel. I am.
I can't hear. Hey, Chantel.
Hello? Hello? Hi? Hello? Yep. Better. No, it was that. They just turned the volume down. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to present to you here. I appreciate it. Good morning. My name is Ashwin Rangan. I have been with ICANN now for a couple of years. What I wanted to do this morning is to take you through a few slides to give you a perspective of what's going on from an IT viewpoint. David, who serves as our CTO and does a lot of research on the evolution of the identifier systems, will also be talking about some specific aspects. So with that, I'm going to kick this off and then hand it over to David, and then we can open it up to the floor for questions. Thank you. Next slide, please. As I said, I onboarded a couple of years back. The first year was really getting to know the constituencies that we were serving, the state of IT overall. In calendar 15, I got through the basics of hiring and planning and getting our act together and starting a series of things, particularly in response to back then a series of security-oriented events that had occurred with ICANN's assets, which led to deep diving into very specific areas that needed to be shored up and specific platforms that were aged and therefore were not up to fielding the vulnerabilities and threat vectors that today are more prevalent. The list of 10 projects that you see there were all discussed at length, both with the board and with the senior teams within ICANN, so that we could get the correct resources lined up behind them. I particularly want to draw attention to two or three that are security-oriented, which I was told would be an area of potential interest to this group of people. If you look at it, in particularly number 8, very quickly after I joined ICANN, we started working on what's known as hardening of the IT infrastructure. Essentially, from a physical perspective, it's like creating perimeter defenses so that our fences are well guarded and they're tall enough to potentially prevent the bad guys from getting across and getting into our properties. For the business-oriented people, the way I explain this is that the valuable that we actually have is data, and the systems are the way through which we put the data into our storehouse and from where we remove the valuables. So just hardening the system itself is not good enough. We need to make sure that the storehouses that we have are well locked and that the keys are appropriately stored. This effort that we started, number 8, in 2014, it used a well-known, globally recognized framework leveraging which we did a benchmark. The framework uses 20 different controls and measures each of these on a 10-point scale. And when we did the benchmarking, our score was roughly 110, and we therefore set ourselves a task of getting to parity with some of the best institutions that also protect global public data, such as global banks. Those institutions typically have a score of 160 to 165. We set that as a target for ourselves. And between 2014 and 2015, we had a series of actions taken within ICANN. We did a re-up on the benchmark last year in the June timeframe, and our score had improved markedly. We had gone from 110 to 135. We've continued to put investments behind that, and our expectation this year, we'll be doing yet another re-up in the June timeframe, is that we'll be about 150. As we make more efforts, this is a curve that doesn't scale linearly to the right, but instead it takes more and more effort to get higher and higher up in the scale. We'll continue to make our efforts over the next few years so that we achieve parity, which is the kind of target that we set for ourselves, if not to surpass the parity with banks themselves. I also want to draw attention to the next project, which is number 9. Our software portfolio has been gathered over a period of 15 years, ever since ICANN started operations. So the platforms that we have been using over those many years have varied because technologies do change with time. What we undertook last year was a systematic review of the software portfolio so that each program in every element of the portfolio was opened up by third parties who are recognized to be experts at discovering potential vulnerabilities in software. They came back with lists of things that we needed to do so that we could fix potential vulnerabilities. We've been at it now for about a year, and I'm pleased to tell you that the entire portfolio has been reviewed. All the high and medium vulnerabilities have been completely taken care of, and a program has been put in place whereby, on a continual revolving basis, every program will be reviewed for new vulnerabilities moving forward by leveraging, again, third parties who are experts at this particular game. What we don't know is what new vectors come up as threats, but what we do know is that there are people who are experts at it who can be retained and whose services can be leveraged so that we understand what's coming toward us and we take action appropriately. Next slide, please. Chantal, next slide. All right. So the result of this for us is, you know, we've likened this to flying many different planes and having to sort of land them in different sequences depending on what exactly it is that we're doing. 9 or 10 programs is a lot of programs from an IT viewpoint. Typically, large companies, when they undertake large IT initiatives, tend to do it in groups of 2 or 3, rarely in groups of 9 or 10, because it's a lot of coordination and work, not only on part of the technology function, but more importantly, on part of all the benefiting functions who then have to jump in and go through change and change management and making sure that the new becomes the norm as opposed to leaning back on the old. We've talked a lot about how to go about doing this given how far behind we were with our technology investments. And that recognition has led to an all-hands-to-deck kind of an attitude so that I have the commitment of the senior management teams. Communication and change management is becoming the norm in ICANN today, which is a very different cadence compared with 2 years ago. It's as much about culture as it is about making changes to systems. It's about thinking about the data that we protect on behalf of the public that gives us the data. These are all new mindsets that we're creating with our staff so that there are new sensibilities in the organization. Next slide, please. So the teams that are working and focused on both change management and IT systems development, we are increasingly using the terminology of the air traffic control towers. It's not about just flying these planes. It's much more about landing each of them very safely. We had the pleasure of listening to a pilot who said that good pilots land planes well. Great pilots make sure that the plane can take off again. So we're making sure that we're becoming great pilots as we move forward. Next slide, please. So it's a team approach, as I said. We've set up very consistent governing structures and processes within ICANN. Change management and communication is the norm, increasingly so than the exception now. We are looking at processes and services that we extend for the benefit of many different stakeholders as we go through this process, with service optimization and process delivery optimization as the goal. We are not very good at introducing new services yet. We are getting better at it. Technology delivery from an IT viewpoint is certainly on a track where more and more is being expected of us. Our metrics tracking is taking on a decidedly outcomes bias as opposed to an activity bias. So did we deliver to the value that we said we would as opposed to what did we do per se? So we're defining success up front and working with multiple pieces of our organization to track the metrics and report back on it. You will continually see this in the form of service availability, which is the one thing that you care about. And you will see that metric continually reflected on our outward-facing website and reports out continually to the community, to the board risk committee, and to the full board on a regular basis. Next slide, please. And with that, I'll either take questions or hand it over to David Conrad.
Thank you, Ashia. Maybe, David, if you could go ahead and provide some remarks, and then we can do a Q&A after all that.
Yep, happy to. Slides are coming up. Hi, I'm David Conrad, ICANN CTO. I've been with ICANN this time for about 18 months. I was previously at ICANN from 2005 to 2010, where I was IANA general manager and then served in the role that Ash now holds, and I am forever grateful that he holds that role. Next slide, please. I was asked a number of questions in the email that invited me here. These are the two questions at a high level. What are the major technical challenges with the IANA transition, and what are the major SSR challenges going forward? Next slide, please. In terms of technical challenges, I actually broke this into two parts, the IANA transition and the non-IANA transition. With respect to the IANA transition, most of the technical challenges revolve around sort of migrating the existing software systems away from the current tripartite model in which change requests are received by the IANA function operator, being ICANN, authorized by the Root Zone Administrator, which is NTIA, and implemented by the Root Zone Maintainer, VeriSign, to a duopoly of ICANN and VeriSign, or the IANA function operator and the Root Zone Maintainer. In order to do this, we've had to modify our existing software systems that are used for root management to allow us to first verify that any of the changes that we're making in the software aren't breaking anything. To do that, we have created a parallel testing system. Doing that was required some amount of software development. Nothing particularly exciting in terms of software development, but because the root management system is considered sort of a critical function, we have to be exceptionally careful in how we do that software development. The second sort of bit was removing NTIA from the loop. Currently, the way root zone management is done is a request comes into IANA, it's validated, it's then sent in parallel, conceptually in parallel, to NTIA and to VeriSign, and then NTIA authorizes, after verifying that ICANN followed its policies and processes, it essentially releases the request that's already sitting at VeriSign to be implemented into the root zone. How that actually works out in practice is there's an EPP communication between ICANN and VeriSign, and then a PGP-signed email is sent to NTIA that includes the change that's being submitted, and NTIA logs into a particular web interface, pressing a button on that interface to release the request to VeriSign. Since NTIA is going away, assuming the transition moves forward, we had to take them out of the loop. So there was some amount of again, relatively minor software modifications. However, the sort of concern there was just the timing of getting that done. We wanted to have that system in testing using the parallel testing methodology that we developed as quickly as possible, and that resulted in making things a little more interesting. And finally, while ICANN has worked under a service level agreement with the U.S. government in the performance of the IANA functions, with the removal of NTIA post-transition, there was a desire by the community to have a new set of service levels, ones that were much more finely grained than the existing service levels that were defined by the U.S. government. The service level expectations, as they're called, required relatively non-trivial changes in the code again, this time to insert measurement points within the code to allow us to collect our performance data on this fine granular level. All of these, again, are not rocket science type software development. Within our particular environment, they did produce us some challenges. The service level expectations in particular, there was a desire by the community to have 6 months' worth of data collected, and because of the timing of when they completed the definition of what the measurement points would be, we actually ran into some challenges in meeting that deadline. The code would be done quite quickly, but then we'd have to actually collect data for 6 months, and that actually put us past the time frame at which the transition would be possible. The community also had indicated that the transition could not go forward unless the service level agreements were in place. So that put us in a bit of a bind. Yesterday, we had a meeting with members of the CWG in order to see if they would allow us a little flexibility in the data collection timeframes, since the CSC, the Customer Standing Committee, was created specifically to adjust performance criteria for the IANA function operator. They agreed, so we're only going to be required to collect 3 months of data, and that allows us to actually move forward with the transition. On the non-IANA transition side of things, the technical challenges are actually, at least from my perspective, far more interesting. There are, again, sort of taking the top three. The first one, and the one that is perhaps the most technically challenging, is rolling the root DNSSEC key signing key, and rolling in this context means changing. So when we signed the root in 2010, we created a trust anchor that allowed for validators, DNSSEC resolvers that do DNSSEC validation, to verify the data has not been modified in flight. Resolvers, validating resolvers since 2010, then included that configuration information, usually as shipped from the to the vendors. We are in the process now of developing a plan to actually change that key. An implication of that is that all of those resolvers will need to change their configuration. If they do not change their configuration, validation will fail. The implication of validation failing is that domain names are not looked up. You get a serve fail response. So one of the challenges of my team is to actually come up with a plan that minimizes the amount of breakage on the internet when we actually do roll the key. When we signed the root in 2010, we made an assertion that the root key would be changed after 5 years. We signed in 2010. It's been after 5 years, so we have to initiate the process of signing, rolling the key. That process will take some amount of time. It's because of the way the system works, it should take about 18 months to actually roll the key. During that time, there will be some interesting problems that will potentially be experienced, mostly caused by an increase in the size of the DNS response for signed zones. The second technical challenge is a project that we've initiated called Identifier Technologies Health Indicators. The basic concept behind this project is to try to establish a baseline of the health of the internet. Obviously, we need to define what health of the internet actually means, identifier technologies, and to track the changes to those indicators over time to determine whether or not the health of the identifier technologies is improving or degrading based on activities that ICANN performs. This is a bit challenging for a number of reasons. One, even defining what health of identifier technologies actually is, but also then specifying those indicators in a way that allow for objective measurement instead of subjective measurement. That project is being headed up by one of my team members, Alain Durand, and we are actually having a session on that on Wednesday afternoon after the technical experts group meeting, in which we'll put forth basically some straw men and are definitely looking for input from the community as to what appropriate indicators for identifier technology health would be. Finally, with relation to the non-IANA transition, we are in the process of developing metrics to try to identify changes in how the DNS is being abused. As many of you know, there are a large number of domain names that are being used for nefarious purposes. We are working with a number of security organizations, anti-abuse organizations, to collect various data feeds to try to identify this DNS abuse, and in the process of trying to establish metrics to allow us to measure how the abuse is either getting better or worse. This sort of corresponds with the Healthy Domain Initiative. They weren't coordinated in any way, but it is a project that we initiated before we were even aware of the DNA's Healthy Domain Initiative. Next slide. I was asked about the definition of SSR, Security, Stability, and Resiliency for ICANN. This is actually documented in the SSR framework, which you can see from that URL down below. On page 5, the definition of SSR for ICANN is within our technical mission. ICANN's SSR, Security, Stability, Resiliency role encompasses three categories of responsibilities: operational responsibilities, which are actually fortunately largely fall in Ash's house, which include the LRUT operations, DNSSEC keysign, and it actually falls in, and the INA functions both fall within GDD under the INA functions contract currently and future through the community empowerment mechanisms. New TLD operations also fall into GDD. Time zone database management, which is a non-contractual IANA function, is a function performed by IANA staff that aren't under the IANA functions contract. The second sort of category of responsibilities, we act as a coordinator, collaborator, and facilitator with a global community in both policy and technical matters related to the Internet's unique identifier system. What this largely means is that we work with a wide variety of folks to try to help identify issues, identify areas in which the identifier system is evolving, and in general just try to facilitate the improvement of the identifier system across the Internet. And we also engage with others in the global Internet ecosystem. The others in this context are folks like the IETF, the RIRs, network operation groups, anti-abuse organizations, law enforcement, governments, those sorts of things. Next slide, please. I was asked what ICANN's role in larger SSR challenges are. And simply, within the scope of how ICANN views security, stability, and resiliency, we collaborate, coordinate, and facilitate with various stakeholder groups to try to identify and offer potential remediation and mitigations of threats that could impact the health of the identifier system. Typically, in this context, we're talking about domain name type abuse and threats to the domain name system. But we also do play some role in IP addressing. We usually refer any issues off to the RIRs because they're much better placed to deal with those issues. In the case of DNS-related issues, we typically refer off to the registries and registrars. And finally, I was asked about SSR data gathering and analysis. So the key here is identification. We try to identify the threats in the unique identifier, security, stability, and resiliency. We use data wherever we can find it. We collect data feeds from a wide variety of anti-abuse organizations, but we also have ability to collect our own data. One of the projects that we're currently undertaking is to analyze data that's coming into the LRUT server. We have started a pilot project that looks at data that's coming into ns.icann.org, the name server that we run for ICANN domains, that also happens to be the name server for .int, .ug, and Uganda, and .museum for reasons that I'm sure make sense historically. But it has provided us with an interesting set of data to explore. For example, we discovered that in the case of Uganda, a very large number of queries going to .ug are, like when I say large, on the order of 90 to 95% of the queries for domain names in .ug are actually queries for domain generation algorithm-generated domain names that are caused by malware. There appears to be a particular version of malware, the name of which I've forgotten, that has chosen .ug domains to serve for their command and control connections. We anticipate seeing similar data when we are able to extract information from the root zone, the root server queries, and that kind of data is some of the things that we're looking at. We also, as I mentioned, collect feeds from folks like Spam House and Shadow Server, and those to help us identify areas in which domain name abuse is occurring, to work with various folks to try to mitigate that. And that's an area that we are expending significant effort at this point in time. And with next slide, please. And with that, if there are any questions, I or Ash will undoubtedly be happy to answer.
So the queue is forming. So let me. I see. Yes, hold on. So I asked, there's also a question in the chat room. I know Mark McFadden offered one. So why don't we maybe I'll quickly start with Mark just because he's in there, and then I see Denise, Steve, Tony, Jimson, and Angie. Okay, we'll work our way around that way. So let me quickly pull this up. So Mark McFadden from the ASPCP asked, in the recent past, ICANN and the CTO have sponsored research by other organizations on resolution data related to the new GTLD program. It's very welcome work, and the ISP committee hope it continues. However, we hope that there's an opportunity to expand the metrics that are being researched and that the surveys continue on a routine basis. For instance, it would be very welcome to have some measurement of how successful the resolution of IDNs are. It would also be interesting to have some reliable data of how real the concern that new GTLDs are a greater source of, quote, abuse of certain kinds. Can the wise and witty CTO confirm that ICANN will continue to sponsor such research and that it will expand the metrics examined?
Thank you, Mark. That actually falls directly into the Identifier Technologies health indicators. We recognize that collecting data on a one-off basis is interesting, but it doesn't allow us to identify trends over time. We have worked, for example, with APNIC to collect data regarding the deployment and use of IDNs and to see where they are being filtered. We have already initiated a follow-on to that. We plan on doing that on a quarterly basis, as long as APNIC is willing to continue to play with us. We're also looking at a whole series of other metrics for the health of the identifier system. But we would be extremely happy to get input, particularly from this community, about the areas in which they believe the health of the identifier technology system is being impacted so that we can identify indicators and track those over time. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, David. So let's go ahead and start the queue. Denise, go ahead.
Thank you. Denise Michelle with Facebook. Thank you so much, both of you, for those presentations. So much information and so little time. I have a couple of requests, and then I'll just list a few things that I'd like that I think we'd really like additional information on. And so maybe that's a takeaway, and we could follow up on email. I'd like to make a request that that your staff, David, email the constituencies represented here as they move forward with the health of identifier technologies indicators, as well as the DNS abuse efforts. I think those are critically important, and I know Facebook, I think, and other companies would really like to work with your team and contribute more. I think particularly on the DNS abuse, that announcement, I think, was not on very many people's radar. I don't know what kind of response you got, but we would really like another bite at the apple on providing additional input for that. So a few questions. So when you find that 95% in the Uganda CCTLD is essentially malware, what do you do with that information? Second question is, how does the health of identifier technology indicators relate to the marketplace index efforts that are going on? What is your team's involvement? I'm just going to throw out questions you can email because there's no way we have time, but I've got you captive. So what's your team's involvement in the Spec 11 security framework drafting team for registry operators? When will we expect to see another SSR, an updated SSR framework published? I'd be interested in the trends on your budget over the last couple of years, given this very expanding portfolio. also interested in more details on the threat preparedness efforts that your team is undertaking, and also efforts to better understand the health and well-being and threats to the DNS ecosystem. Also would like some more information on the capacity building on SSR that you're doing with the CCTLD community, as well as the public safety communities. And finally, an update on what's happening with the technical experts group would also, I think, be useful. And given so much activity that's occurring in this space, I think it would be really useful if we could have an intersessional, perhaps, conference call or audio to get more information and updates on this very, very packed and quick-moving portfolio of yours. Thank you.
That was a few questions, yeah. Very briefly, in the case of Uganda, we attempt to get in contact with the TLD manager to offer them whatever services we can. Typically, it's basically providing referrals to other organizations to help them work to try to mitigate any problems that they might have. In this particular case, the problem is actually related to the how easy it is to spin up botnets and zombies on the internet. The Uganda is more the target of the problem as opposed to the generator of the problem. Part of the issue is that relates to the registration policies within Uganda. It seemed to whoever came up with the malware that it was easier to register in Uganda. But with that said, that I believe that malware targets 8 or 9 different top-level domains for the command and control domains. So it just happened that Uganda was the lucky one on that particular occasion. The relationship between the identifier technologies, health indicators, and the marketplace indicators, we view the market indicators as a subset of the identifier technologies. The health of the marketplace is relevant to the health of the identifier technologies as a whole, but it's not the sole metric in our view. So we have a superset of indicators for the health of the system, not just the market. My team has been actively engaged in Spec 11-3B work. I've actually taken a personal interest in that work because I believe it is important for the health of the new GTLD program itself if the registries are able to find ways to sort of be proactive in addressing the abuse that's occurring, particularly within the new GTLDs, but in TLDs in general. Because if they don't, then there, I believe, a personal opinion, that there is a risk that the new GTLDs will be classified as garbage and filtered out at resolvers and other places. So I'm trying to work with both the PSWG of the GAC and the registries to try to ensure that there is sort of a mutual agreement on forward motion in this area so that we can begin to address the abuse in a way that minimizes the potential risk to the program and the DNS as a whole. The SSR framework, I actually don't know that off the top of my head. I'll have to talk with John Crane, who's the Chief Security Stability Resiliency Officer, who's in charge of work coming out with a new version of the framework. I believe we're working on it now. Trends in the budget. Let's see. As opposed to the many of the other teams within ICANN, my FY17 preliminary FY17, obviously up for a community review, budget actually went up. So I'm very pleased about that. Of course, I want more, given the fiscal realities that ICANN works under, I'm happy with the small increase that I did get. Threat preparedness is something that we are definitely working on. One of the key goals of the SSR team is to try to identify the emerging threats and to make that information available to whoever wants it. One of the challenges that we've had in the past is sort of a lack of mechanisms by which we can communicate effectively with the various constituencies within ICANN. One of the reasons that I'm so happy to be speaking here is that I definitely want to remedy that. So when we identify threats, I will undoubtedly be spewing way too much information to you all so that you can be aware when those threats are coming and what they actually might mean. Similarly, threats to the DNS, we see, in our role, particularly both in the research side and the SSR side, we tend to see things, and we're happy to try to relay that information. We've just not had a really good mechanism by which to do that. On the TEG, we are in the process of bringing in a contractor to help facilitate the technical experts group. We actually have a web page that has been developed, but it has not yet been made public because we just ran out of time. There will be a TEG meeting here, and it's an open meeting. People are invited. It's on Wednesday from 3:30 to 5. I forget the room. We actually are planning on expanding the scope of the TEG to help me in figuring out what the right areas of research should be for my research team. And with regards to an intersessional, I would be more than happy to participate in any sort of intersessional calls that you might want. As mentioned, I have an interest in trying to improve communications, and if there are any questions that you have, I am happy to answer them at any time, or if you would like me to participate in your meetings, you feel free to contact me, and I will be happy to attend.
Thank you, David, and certainly that the CSG can think about brainstorming maybe an opportunity in the near future for that type of interaction. Steve Del Bianco.
Thanks, Steve Del Bianco. Thank you, David and Ash. I know you're aware that the community will consider approval of the transition accountability proposal this week, but you may not be aware that buried in that proposal in Annex on stress test is three stress testers specifically targeted at your department. I'm seeing some level of acknowledgement, but let me quickly point them out to you. Stress tests 1 and 2 that were suggested almost a year ago by the community were failure of either the change or delegation authority in the root zone. And in the stress testing, it didn't suggest how to solve and stop the problem. Instead, it asked, do the new accountability mechanisms give the community the opportunity to challenge the corporation on its decisions, and to hold the corporation accountable for its actions or inactions in the face of these scenarios and stress tests. So 1 and 2, as I said, were change and delegation failures. And in that respect, the stress tests were solved. That's the good news for you, through escalation procedures, the IANA functions review, potential separation. And in Workstream 2, which will start next week, there was a notion of adding security audits or certifications to the root zone management functions that you handle. And then stress test 11, which doesn't get talked about very much, was a compromise of security credentials. Someone in the community suggested that it was shortly after we had a security breach through social engineering of an employee or contractor. And under that one, it said that the community could launch an independent review for the inaction of the corporation, the inaction to protect security, stability, and resiliency, or to enforce your stated procedures for contractors and employees in terms of credentialing. And then finally, an IRP could challenge the board's rejection if the security, stability, and resiliency review made recommendations supported by the community, but the board rejected a particular SSR review team recommendation. And in that respect, the community would then have an ICANN-funded IRP challenge that ICANN was not respecting the bottom-up process. So please be aware of those. If the report gets approved this week, it'll be handed over to the board. The board will send it to NTIA. And the world will see stress test 1, 2, and 11. And since you're implicated, make sure it's on your radar. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, moving down the queue. I know Tony, I believe you're next. Yep. Tony Harris.
Yes, Tony Harris for the record. Just a slight divergence from the subject matter. Could I see your last slide? The previous to the close? Well, you say identification of things that could significantly impact the overall health of the Internet. Would you consider the deployment of IPv6 to be one of these? Because I'm having a lot of trouble in my part of the world, which is South America, in convincing hundreds of ISPs that this is important and they should maybe upgrade to IPv6. Unfortunately, we have Cisco with the NAT system, which enables them to survive without IPv4 addresses, but we have Internet of Things coming down the pipeline. Could you comment on that briefly? I'm sorry to get off the other subject.
No, I actually think that is a relevant subject. One of the identifier technologies, health indicators, sorry, I keep messing up that term. We initially called it Internet health indicators. That we're looking at is the deployment of IPv6, because we do view for the sort of the long-term health of the Internet that it does have to migrate over to IPv6. It is an acknowledged challenge, particularly in areas which infrastructure costs outweigh the ability to pay for the changes to get IPv6 deployed. My personal view, and I believe the view of most of the technologists who are involved, is that IPv4 over time will grow increasingly expensive, either in obtaining address space over the free market or from just the operational costs of the carrier-grade NAT that is being used as a way of mitigating the need to migrate to IPv6. In all cases, we have recommended that if at all possible, one should deploy IPv6 at least in parallel with IPv4. Even if you have to deploy CGNAT, having IPv6 in parallel will allow you a reasonable future path that you can grow into. We are happy to work with anyone to expand on sort of the themes of the need for IPv6 deployment. I know we've had interactions with Internet Society and the RIRs on this topic. We generally try to refer off to the RIRs in cases where there are some regional components or there is a need for direct involvement to obtain IPv4 or IPv6 addresses. But we definitely will work with those partners to try to provide the necessary information to encourage people to accept the cost, the near-term cost of redeploying infrastructure to implement IPv6, because the long-term costs, we believe, will be significantly less.
That's right. So I think we have Jimson, I believe, is next, and then Angie. And then is there anyone else that may have a question? Because we probably should close the queue because we're about halfway through our meeting. So, okay, great. Then Jimson, then Angie, and then we'll wrap up.
Thank you, Ash and David. This is Jimson Lufi speaking. Two quick questions, or three. First to Ash. Directly, I want to ask, as ICANN is on cloud or is using a public cloud or commercial cloud? Two, you did mention a framework for IT infrastructure security assurance. So how is that compared to ISO 27001, 27000 security certification? Though Steve mentioned specifically that certification is required in WorkStream too. So I was thinking like we should be part of what we have already. So then to David, what are the major risk issues you are facing now, and how are you addressing them? And so lastly, there was this major malware, since you mentioned a lot of malware issue, ransom, So, yeah, what is your approach to mitigating that? Maybe that could help some. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your first question was with regard to the cloud. We use a combination of clouds. We have a private cloud of our own, and we have access to public clouds like the Salesforce.com cloud, for instance. And we use services that use both components. So we have a strategy called the hybrid cloud strategy. Our intended migration is increasingly to secure clouds, regardless of private or public. We will assess the security of the cloud and make our determination. We won't make cost the fundamental determinant of where we put our services. At the end of the day, we look at ourselves as an institution of global public interest, and the data security is paramount to us, more and more so now. With regard to certification, we have multiple, you know, the security world is full of certifications. There are numerous frameworks that are used depending on the specific aspect of security. ISO 27001 is one of them. The CSC 20 framework that I referred to is globally accepted, particularly by defense contractors globally. We tend to look at them as some of the highest security required kind of frameworks. So we're looking at what makes sense and where. So, for instance, when we look at IANA, we have a different way of looking at IANA services and a different certification process that we go through periodically, regularly. So we will use multiple different frameworks, and as we do, we will declare it like I did, which framework we used, so that if there is interest in probing the framework, there is the ability to do that. The danger in going with a singular framework is that aspects of security may not be comprehended in the framework. We could check the box, but not be secure, and that would not be good. Thank you.
So with regards to the risks, the ones that sort of my team is currently primarily focused on is essentially the DNS abuse risks that we're seeing right now, the sort of the proliferation of malware, botnets, phishing, and farming, many of which are driven by spam, sort of the generic problems that we see on the internet today. Our particular interest in those risks are, you know, how the DNS is being used as a mechanism, a vector for proliferation. As some of you may have seen, Cisco did a report, I believe their annual security report, which indicated something like, I don't remember the statistics off the top of my head, but like 80% or 90%, maybe it was 93%, of all malware that they had investigated made use of the DNS as a mechanism either for command and control or for propagation. So we're looking at that, trying to work with a variety of players, both public and private, to attempt to come up with solutions, mitigation approaches. The one that's sort of the highest priority in that right now is that we're collecting abuse statistics in what are called the GAC-4 types of abuse, which are the malware, phishing, farming, and botnets, into a series of indicators of metrics that we are going to be working with the registry and registrar communities to try to facilitate an industry sort of self-regulation approach to help the industry sort of mitigate those problems themselves, similar, as I said, to the Healthy Domain Initiative coming out of the DNA. In terms of ransomware, that's largely outside of the scope of ICANN's technical remit. Where it does touch us is, again, in the use of the DNS for mitigation, for command and control and propagation. We, as mentioned, are where we sit in the internet infrastructure operationally with running a root server, we are able to, at least in theory, see when malware, particularly the ransomware like CryptoLocker, are propagating. And when we do see that, we can work with law enforcement and anti-abuse organizations to try to help mitigate the propagation of that malware.
Sorry, Chris, maybe just quick follow-up. This is quite very important to my constituency, you know, in Africa, because there's a lot of abuse going through, as you mentioned, Uganda, going through the process. So capacity is also important in this regard. There's a lot of requests for need for means to tackle that. So we'll be having a summit towards the end of the year. So maybe perhaps from your office we can get some people to come speak to them in Namibia.
Yes, I would be more than happy. Feel free to contact me directly, and I will ensure that there will be somebody there.
Angie, and then we'll close the conversation.
Yeah, this is Angie Graves in the BC. Thanks for, you covered quite a bit of information in a short amount of time. It was a nice presentation. Thank you for that. And I did just do a search on IPv6 after Tony mentioned it, and there is quite a bit of information on the ICANN site advocating for IPv6, so that's nice to see. Just a few questions. Will we know the SLOs that make up the SLAs? Will we have any visibility into that when that's determined? Also, with respect to the RSK key length, I know you had a lot to cover, but the impact is very high, and we need communication to the entire community. I'd like to know about your plans to address that. And then with respect to, you covered some of these, the identifier technology health, you've covered that. The last thing is, we have a currently open public comment period on the DNS abuse draft report. You might want to mention that. If you haven't, you may have, and I missed it. Thank you.
So, sure. On the SLEs, one of the requirements from the community was that all of the information, all of these metrics that are being collected for the performance of the root management function will be made public. This will allow third parties to take the information and verify it themselves. So all of that information will be made public. Initially, it will be anonymized because this is new information, and we did not want to sort of create policy on the fly here with regards to making information, potentially identifying information for TLD changes to be made public without the community sort of demanding we do that. Initially that'll be anonymized, but if the community would like the ability to identify the requesters in the TLD change requests, then presumably there'd be a cross-community working group. Everything else, the thresholds, the SLAs themselves, all of that information will be made public and actually will be approved by the CWG before they allow the transition to move forward. On the topic of the KSK rollover and the key length, yes, that is a very significant issue. One of the reasons it has taken a number of years to develop the KSK rollover plan is simply because of the sensitivity of changing the root trust anchor and the implications that would have for the resolution as a whole. We have begun the development of a communications plan. We've actually hired Edelman, a PR agency, to help us develop a worldwide, highly intensive communication plan targeting initially the vendors and distributors of DNS software, but then eventually targeting the folks who run resolvers who have to make the changes, as well as the general public, about the fact that the key role is coming and the implications of the key role and who to contact if they notice any problems. We anticipate that communication plan to actually take some amount of time to implement because we do need to make sure that there is as much awareness of this as we can make. And so that's a an ongoing topic. And with regards to the public comment on the DNS abuse, yes, I am aware of it, and it is a topic of significant interest within my team. Thank you.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Ash, very much for this presentation. I know we run a little long, but I think it's been a helpful dialogue and discussion, and I know we look forward to continuing to talk with you both and your teams going forward. So thank you very
thank
much.
You. Thank you very much.
So we have 35 minutes left in our meeting, and I know we've got a few more items, but I don't think we need to too much time, at least the time allotted for those discussions, but perhaps we quickly can turn to the final board prep, maybe spend just a couple of minutes on that, just to sort of, if we need to, close the loop on any discussion. But you know, I know when we had it earlier this week, we had our CSG meeting and went over sort of topics from each constituency. Just as far as the order of operations is concerned, I believe the IPC is kicks off the discussion. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep. And then the ISPCP and then the BC will come in third. I had sent around a list. The BC met yesterday. We slightly revised our focus. I shouldn't say focus, but slightly revised our list of topics. And we'll still continue to discuss the RCEP data gathering issue. We'll also ask the board for its input and sort of point of view on, generally speaking, on the Healthy Domains Initiative. And then if time allows, we'll perhaps ask further or perhaps make a statement of inquiry about board recognition of public comments that are filed by the BC and other constituencies and making sure that they actually read them because they carry a lot of weight and value. And then, again, if possible, if time allows, we'll simply flag for the board the importance of a cogent response to the U.S. Senator's letter to the board with regard to ICANN's interaction with China, simply just making them aware that it's an important issue. We hope that they can we'll take it seriously and do so in a timely fashion. So those are, from the BC's point of view, those are sort of the general focal points for us in our 30 minutes. And so happy to turn it over. Maybe, Greg, if you want to provide a little insight, further insight on IPC, and then I can turn it to Wolf Ulrich and Tony, whoever else.
Sure. Thank you, Chris. Greg Shatton, IPC, for the record. Our topics, first is the implementation of Thick Who Is, or the lack thereof, and its relationship to the potential re-signing of the VeriSign contract for .com without any recognition of the issue, apparently, or whether there'll be recognition of the issue in that contract. Secondly, also a comment on public comment period issues. And depending upon what the BC wants to do with your list, we could roll your issue into our discussion as well. I've found in the past that if you go past two issues of substance, you run out of time. So you just word to the wise. So it may be, make more sense for us to kind of raise the substance issue as well as the process issue. And having participated in a number of public comment from the working group side, can see where there are issues that arise in even the best good faith efforts to try to analyze public comments in a meaningful way. We've assembled a team to come to the table with the board. And then, we also have two questions the board has asked us to make things interesting, one on diversity and the other on our reaction to the CCWG accountability report, which kind of rolls into the next topic on our screen. So I'll save our comment on that, if any, for that point. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. This is Chris. Yeah, I'm happy if you want to raise the macro issue of public comment, and we can certainly just second that emotion when it comes around. I think for us that was a case if there was time allowed, we would mention it. But I think it perhaps makes sense for that, and I can echo your comments when the time comes. Let me go ahead and maybe Wolf Ulrich, if you wanted to make any comment on the ISPC's focus with the board, and then I can turn it to the queue.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. We're fully speaking. So we have actually two topics to cover. The first one is related to the GNSO review. The main message to the board first our concern with the GNSO review, which the independent evaluator has been doing so far, without touching on the structure of the GNSO. On the other hand, also to convey to the board that we are happy that we have been invited by the board. What is it, structural committee or the new name? I don't know. To express our views on our structure, on these structural ideas, and in this context, also outlining that we are the first time doing something together on the House level. So we are in the first steps in establishing a combined effort towards the new structure or ideas of the structure. And one of the main messages shall be as well that in this context we are of the opinion that in future the board should be more aware about the distinct and the diverse structure within that house and within the stakeholder groups themselves. Well, in order to be aware, if it comes to a new structural review, that one goal should be that the diverse and distinct aspects of this house should be more and better reflected in this structure. So this is that what we are doing about the structural review. And we have a second item or question where I'm going to refer to to Malcolm here with regards to the future of the IANA transition and accountability. Malcolm.
Thank you. Yes, the question that we were going to raise there relates specifically on the accountability reforms. We are anticipating and hoping that by the end of this week, all the chartering organisations will have been able to have communicated that they accept and support the proposed reforms from the CCWG, and that in consequence the CCWG will be transmitting the report on to the board on behalf of the community. At that stage, the next steps then bifurcate slightly. There's an implementation, and the CCWG and others have work to do in developing the implementation phase for those reforms. But there's also the transmission of the report along with the transition proposal by the board onto NTIA, which will then look at it. And at that point, and in that phase, it moves outside the ICANN community and into a more political phase. And that'll be looked at by NTIA. And Mr. Strickling said in the GAC meeting earlier this week that it will also get keen attention from the US Congress, which raises the question that we do not strictly know precisely what will happen during that accountability phase. It is possible that we hope that will go smoothly, but it is possible that for political reasons there will be some unforeseen delay. And that raises the question that we would like to ask to the board. In the event of an unforeseen delay at a political level, will the board nonetheless commit to proceeding with the implementation of the reforms that the community has asked for? Or does the board think that such a delay would be the occasion to suspend the implementation of those while that delay is resolved? We hope that the board will recognise that these are reforms that the community has asked for generally, and we were looking for a commitment from the board to continue implementation. But in particular, we would like to see where the board stands on that, and we hope that mm-hmm. they can answer that point.
So I know that's a good segue to our next topic on the agenda, but Marilyn, you had a question? And then, yeah.
Let me make it quick. On the issue, on the topic that the board asked us about diversity, the board is responding to concerns expressed about geographic diversity and other issues, but I just want to remind everybody that today is International Women's Day, and there's also a diversity issue, just a sensitivity issue to point out. There's also perhaps a diversity issue that you may hear from a couple of the board members having to do with gender diversity. Let me flag that for everyone so it's you're aware that of the notice. And also, you know, I hope that we can make a point, and perhaps Jimson, who has been leading so much of the work that the BC has been doing, or someone else could respond to, what we need from the board and staff is more direct support to our outreach to improve our diversity. Right now what we're getting is a lot of staff-driven work. I don't want to be critical. I just want to give the message that what we need and are asking for and we'll work on off separately on is how they support us to do the growth and diversification.
I think agreement.
Including more women.
This is Chris. I think there's agreement in the room on that front. Any final thoughts, questions, concerns about board prep?
Thank you, Wolfley speaking. Just to Marion's last point, well, the board, you know, conveyed this question to us, if you remember quite, because to, during that meeting we had a discussion on GNSO with the board, on the GNSO, together with the board on Sunday morning, about that, so the board was asking each community, so we could pick up that. So I'm wondering where we should that do. I was thinking about whether I should take that in the context of the GNSO review, structural review, just to highlight this point, if I may.
So real quickly, it's Marilyn again. There is also a ongoing conversation between the NPOC, who are engaged in outreach, and some of us who are engaged in outreach about actually proposing some interim changes in outreach to address this diversity issue, including with budget implications, and then moving into even something, which I was going to save until later, but even something like a cross-community working group on outreach, et cetera. That's too big to talk about now, and we haven't talked about it. But I think if you take it up, Wolf, in that context, if you could still make the point that it is the constituent, it's not a GNSO council issue. It is a constituency issue.
Phil?
Yeah, I just have a quick question for Greg. On the thick who is for COM, I thought that was already being implemented. So I'm just trying to figure out the basis for the question. So
I'll let Steve
have you done a who is search on .com lately?
Not recently, no.
No, well, in 2 years, you may have thick who is, which will be 4 years after the board adopted the consensus policy. That's the pace at which it's moving.
Okay.
So that's the focus of the,
okay,
of the comment.
Thanks.
Any other questions, concerns, thoughts on board prep? Okay, great. Well, then let's maybe turn within the final 20 minutes or so to accountability update implementation. Perhaps maybe I'll turn to maybe our GNSO counselors quickly just to get, for those that don't already know, get a state of play where the GNSO is in its consideration, and then we can go around the talk also at the constituency level about where and perhaps where we each stand on that, if that makes sense for folks. Does that work? Okay. Phil?
Yeah, the state of play, and there's some emails, is there's an informal council meeting at 6 to 7 tonight. Counselors are being asked to indicate by that time on behalf of those they represent, one, whether they intend to ask for roll call votes on any of the 12 recommendations. And now Keith Trazik has requested and James Waddell has said it's a good idea to also ask counselors whether any of them, to indicate whether any of them plan to vote no on the final vote, which is the package vote on all 12 recommendations. But as of now, no one has indicated they want to vote on any of the 12 recommendations, but that can change. You know, the deadline is 6 tonight, so we'll know more later today.
Great. Perhaps maybe then, if just, think we get a sense of the room from the constituency level where we maybe it's good to talk about where we are, our perspectives on the proposal. I think we have a good idea, but maybe I'll turn to Steve DelBianco quickly to speak on the behalf of the BC, and then if you want to turn to the others, we can do that.
Yeah, thank you. The BC prepared detailed comments on each of the recommendations in the third draft. That was a November draft. And our analysis of the final draft indicates that all or nearly all of the changes we requested were implemented in the final draft. So barring some shocking surprise at the BC constituency meeting today, the BC will be in support of the proposal. I hope that's the level of detail you needed.
I think that'd be good. Maybe, Greg, are you willing to say a few words?
Sure, I'll say a few words. Greg Shatton for the IPC. We've discussed this, and while we have a number of concerns, and not just with substance, but with the process and the way the process allowed or didn't allow us to review and fully understand the substance, given the complexity and breadth of the proposals and some of the very truncated periods and inconvenient periods, especially for those who, for instance, celebrate any winter holiday. Nonetheless, while those concerns, you know, did not evaporate, did not rise to the level either of not supporting the proposal. So we will be supporting the proposal. However, we are preparing statements which are likely to be submitted along with our votes, kind of a yes and or yes but on some of the items. Our analysis was similar to Steve's in that we also submitted detailed comments in the third draft public comment period, and our batting average may be a little bit lower than the BC's, but overall, most of the comments and concerns that we raised were adopted or dealt with, and a couple that were none of them were considered to be those that you would die in a ditch over, as Bart Boswinkel likes to say, and it sounds better with a Dutch accent, and if you're 6'5" and bald, it sounds even better, and I'm none of the above. So I think that that is basically where we stand, subject to any kind of sort of groundswell of a difference of opinion coming up either in the opening meeting on the list, but we've not fully closed our list. And while there's, we're not sitting around and dancing a jig over every last piece of the accountability proposal overall, if any one group was completely satisfied, there'd be some problem with the consensus process. So perhaps that's a good sign. Thank you.
This is Chris. Thanks, Greg. I appreciate that. Maybe I'll turn to Wolf Ulrich or Malcolm, either of you, just provide a quick point of view from the ISPCP.
Well, we will be having our meeting after lunch, and so that will conclude this issue for us. But my strong expectation is that we will be supporting the package as a whole. We will not be encouraging individual votes, roll call votes, although if they have to happen, they have to happen. But our preference is to have a simple and clear statement of support for the package as a package. Whether or not we would attach any comments to go alongside that or not is something that we will consider at the meeting. I don't have anything to offer for you on that. But we will be wanting to give a clear message that regardless of any the sorts of comments that Greg was just referring to, the ISPCP supports this going through. That is my strong expectation.
Yes, thank you. We fully support with that. That's the way how we are dealing with it. As a council member, so speaking here, so I think it's very likely that we are going to vote on the on some of the recommendations, because, the path is very clear, how it's structured the process right now. And the question here is to me, this shall be the process if until today, I think, is it? No, tomorrow's meeting, tomorrow's site meeting. No, it's a day.
today is Tuesday, really. So until this afternoon, if there is any requirement for voting on some of the recommendations separately, so we will go that way first on council. And if one recommendation fails, then we are going to vote on the package. So this is the process. So that has been decided. The process itself has been decided, already has been fixed to go that way. So it just depends on what is going to until this afternoon. So, and we are going to follow that. But as we said here on the ISPCP, we were also in favor of voting on a package. So we have expressed our view on that several times during the Genesok discussion, but we also are in line with that process. Thanks.
Thank you, Will. Phil?
And just to quickly add to that, Phil Corwin for the record, I haven't heard anything to indicate that either of the contracted parties would ask for separate votes. I think if there's any request for separate votes on any of the recommendations, it'll come from the non-contracted stakeholders group. I don't know if they are or not, but we did get word that they're not going to be bound, so they'll be free to vote as they want, and I think they may not get, because of that, they probably won't get, we won't face the situation of a possible majority against any of the recommendations, but that's the best guess as of now.
Just a quick comment before speaking. Well, when we go into the board meeting right now, the one hour from now, what I'm going to do as well, because the board asks us as well, what is our specific position on the proposal, so that it's open to each constituency well to tell them at this meeting, well, we are in line with that. So what is our thinking about that? So that they have got a view, and we made it public in front here of that meeting. Thanks.
Thank you. Marilyn, do you have a question?
I do have a question, but it waits till after the answer. I'll just pose my question. If we could just quickly take any feedback that we got from our conversation with the GAC members at our tables. We have a little feedback from the table I was at before we...
Well, if you have feedback to offer, that'd be great.
Okay. So Thailand and Sweden were at my table. I also got to talk to Paraguay and to a few of the other governments. And generally the feedback I'm getting is there's general optimism. I also got to talk to Argentina about the ELAC countries and the minority statement. So what I'm getting, and that's why I'm interested in hearing what others heard, is that they're optimistic. They'll have a hard day of work, but they're optimistic that, and they are... some of the governments who have a more detailed understanding of the approach of the NCUC are somewhat amused and hopeful that we are going to show the rest of the community, the business community, are going to show support for moving forward.
Thank you, Marilyn. Questions, thoughts on where we are? I will say this, Chris. I will say with regard to implementation going forward, I know although the BC hasn't had a sort of formal discussion on this, I think it's fair to say we would be generally supportive of the notion of accountability going on, notwithstanding political timetables. BC will be meeting at noon today. We have more fulsome discussion on that point of view. But I think, to Malcolm's point, which you're going to be raising in the with the board, I think we're pretty much on same page. That. Steve, do you have a comment on that?
If you want a brief update on the timetable we face in the next several days and weeks and months.
Yeah, I think that'd be helpful. If you could certainly, with regard to sort of the bylaws drafting, the time frame there, and maybe for folks, Steve, if you want to provide sort of an insight a bit into the congressional calendar, U.S. congressional calendar, and how that impacts perhaps the timeline might be helpful for those that aren't aware of that.
All right. On the assumption that the community approves it this week, the board has promised there will be no further issues. We have that in writing, and they'll submit it to NTIA on Friday of this week. They would hand it over. NTIA needs, they say, 90 days to prepare their report. And at the end of the report, they will not stamp it as a final report until they have determined that we have implemented the proposal. And implemented is two things. It's adopting the bylaws, which to Malcolm's point would be key, and it's implementing by setting up the post-transition IANA, or PTI, perhaps putting up meat on the bones of the new IRP, but not necessarily appointing all the panels and soliciting vendors. Some of that just takes too much time. There may be placeholder panelists, placeholder board members for PTI, but Secretary Strickling is anxious to say to Congress, yes, it's been adopted and implemented. We're not hiding the ball. We're not pushing something through that is incomplete. We're not exposing the community, the global community, to the risk that ICANN would backtrack on this, because we're going to make sure it's locked and loaded. That sentiment matches what Congress adopted last summer, the Dot-Com Act, which was passed in the House but not the Senate, even though it enjoyed Senate majority support, said that the U.S. Congress backs the community. It wanted to see the bylaws changes adopted pursuant to what the community wanted, which is the best we could hope for. So look at the calendar, and I think you'll understand the challenge that we have. Work backwards from September the 30th, which is when the IANA contract will simply expire. If you work backwards from that, the Congress goes on break middle of July, and it's an election year in the House. So Congress probably needs to get NTIA's report probably the middle of June to give them some time to look at it. Well, if you work backwards from the middle of June, what about the bylaws changes? The bylaws probably need several weeks of development with the lawyers and of both ICANN and the CCWG, and the rapporteurs and co-chairs of CCWG will stay convened, and we will meet several times a week to review the bylaws drafting language to see that it matches what we had in our proposal. And then we will meet with the full CCWG, probably in late April, to let the full CCWG comment on whether the bylaws match for the report. That is not an opportunity to ask for stuff that wasn't in the report. It's just matching it up. Then we have to go to public comment, because that's typically what ICANN's board does, is they put a bylaws change out for public comment. That's not required in the bylaws, by the way. It's something they do. Well, that public comment period, if it's 30 or 40 days, look where that takes you, late May through June, until the public comment period is over and analyzed. And you can be sure that the public who comments on the bylaws changes probably won't restrain themselves to just say that the bylaws match the proposal. I have a feeling there'll be a lot of freelancing and griping about battles that were lost a long time ago. So it's very challenging to get the bylaws adopted and substantial implementation measures done by the middle of June. Very daunting task in front of us, and Congress itself will hold hearings. They're likely to hold a hearing the week after we get back. They won't wait for NTIA's report. They're going to want to hear about it. But after NTIA's report comes back, they're going to want to look at that as well. So I think that's a daunting timeline, and at the same time, look for a call for volunteers. There are 7 work stream 2 threads that we're going to want to work on, and they're all of them are very important to CSG. So those threads will ask for volunteers to join with the CCWG to work on those Workstream 2 items. And there will probably also be a call to the CSG constituencies to say, do you want to renew your designated rep on CCWG or make a change in that? Because there's no assumption that it has to be the same people going forward. And Chris would be glad to take questions on those details if you want.
So Malcolm, why don't you go? Yep.
Yes, thank you. Agree with what Steve has just said, but one quick clarification I would offer there on the implementation side as it relates to the IRP. Steve, you said that you listed a bunch of things that might not be needed in terms of implementation on that time scale, in terms of things like appointing people and so forth. I'd be a little bit careful about saying these things are not needed as implementation on this track, on this critical path. The report, as we have it, has a degree of constructive ambiguity as to what precise things in terms of implementation need to be done to say that this is implemented. The understanding and the clear statement is actually what you said, that the it needs to be clear that this is available and that ICANN cannot backtrack on this, and ICANN cannot walk away from this. Precisely individual things there are not specified in the report to leave a degree of flexibility on that. I wouldn't want to start glossing that by saying that certain things aren't. It may be, for example, that NTIA takes a view on certain of those things. It may decide that certain of those things are critical. I wouldn't want to get in the middle of that. Okay?
So this is Chris. There's a queue forming. I think I saw Phil, your hands raised, then Greg, and then Steve Metallitz.
Well, just to amplify on what Steve just said, the implementation of the bylaws is tight, but it's in the best shape of all of the implementation steps. We got a presentation from staff and council on Sunday. I forget the other three tracks, but the bylaws they were claiming is 10% done with a target date of mid-June. The other three tracks are 0% done with an expected complete date of September 30th. So there's nothing has been done on the other three tracks, and there's absolutely no wiggle room if there's any delay in any of the other three required tracks for implementation to have a transition on October 1st. So it's going to be challenging.
If I could just add a little color to that, if Secretary Strickling makes the determination that it will not be implemented by September the 30th, they would need to start the process of extending the IANA contract, and they would want to begin that process in the middle of August. So they'll have to make a call in the middle of August about, do we have visibility of implementation by September 30th?
This is Chris. I think August 15th is the date by which USG has to notify. So that's as far as deadlines is concerned. Okay, Greg and then Steve. And then we have 4 minutes left before I think we have to shove off to get to Atlas Room, so quick. And then to Denise.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. Just to amplify and clarify on the question of implementation, you can look at implementation two ways. You really have to look at it both ways. One is, what is the sufficient implementation for U.S. government to be able to, or for NTIA to be able to say that we've kind of hit the proper implementation milestones for them to be able to make the handoff? And then there is kind of full implementation, which is when every last bit is essentially screwed into place. And implementation, so there are, a subset of implementation items which are critical pre-transition actions to take. So in the case of the IRP, it's getting it, the framework in the bylaws done, but it's not having it a panel ready for the first IRP to be filed. Right, but in terms of what the U.S. what I anticipate the U.S. government's view is that it's sufficient that the bylaws are there, because the idea of putting out a tender and vetting panelists and getting all of that in by September 30 is probably it's unrealistic. But the point is that if it's not, that's not what's required in terms of of taking the transition and making it happen.
There are various views you could take on that. I mean, you could say that it's sufficient implementation if the thing is available, and you could say that what we have at the moment is enough to receive a complaint and to start a process in the event that a complaint were received on day one, and that further implementation to do it in the manner constructed could happen during the course of that. So there are various views that one could have about that. But what I was arguing against was adding further statements that are specific as to what is and what is not needed that are not found in the report.
Steve Metallitz, and then Denise, and then we'll close it up.
Just as a sneak preview of our IPC comments, the time periods are extremely important here, and if the bylaws are not available for review for at least 30 days or preferably 40 days, I think there's a serious risk that the IPC will consider that the basis for its yes vote has not really been honored.
Denise
Michelle with Facebook. Related to Steve's comment, I was quite concerned that the draft ICG proposal that was discussed yesterday, developed by staff, but not in coordination with the community advisory committee that provided the guidelines and context, raises grave concerns about the board and staff's commitment on working cooperatively with the community to ensure that the guidance provided by the community and the proposals approved by the community are faithfully carried out in the implementation that staff does. So I just wanted to flag that especially for those of you who weren't in that session yesterday, that implementation and the how and the when of the implementation and the involvement of community with the staff is going to be quite critical, I think, in the ongoing success of this undertaking. Thanks.
Thank you, Denise. It's just in time, 10:45. So thank you all for taking the time to be here, and let's all close this meeting and head on over to the Atlas Room. Thank you.